Hello, welcome to Wombats and Artificial Intelligence. I'm one of your co-hosts for the Artificial Intelligence Show. I am Harry Baia, and I've been hosting Wombats and Music on WEHC for many years now. This is a special 30-minute show. In June of 2019, Dr. Eric Grossman and I sat down together for about an hour and a half and discussed artificial intelligence and some related topics, such as consciousness and the future of computing. What you're going to hear now is the first 30 minutes of that conversation. The second 30 minutes will be played next week at the same time.
I'm Eric Grossman, longtime colleague and friend of Harry's. You know, we've decided to come in here and talk about artificial intelligence and maybe some of the interesting but maybe possibly worrisome trends in computing technology.
I want to mention that Eric Grossman is a professor of education at Emory-Henry College, and we just finished a few minutes ago talking about the evolution of computer technology, in particular the almost unlimited amount of memory we now have and the fact that artificial intelligence can help us sort through that memory. To me, the dimensions of computer power, one is memory, and another is speed, processing power. And another is the whole communication thing of how fast data can be moved from one place to another. And those three things have been just going up leaps and bounds for the last 50 years. And that's why I think artificial intelligence has become such an interesting topic. As in the early days, there really wasn't the horsepower to do much as with the kind of thing we do now. And probably 50 years from now, they'll look back at where we are now and say there wasn't enough horsepower to do much now compared to what they're doing then. Things that were just dreams are now possible. That it's been of great interest to me, and I like to brag. It turns out it was the first international conference on artificial intelligence in 1969. Wow. I was living in Columbus, Indiana.
Claim to fame. Claim to fame the year after I was born. Harry was in the early infancy of artificial intelligence research.
I was in Columbus, Indiana, and I read about it in the paper coming up, and I decided to go. Just took a week's vacation or a weekend, whatever it was, and flew up to Washington, D.C., and went to the conference and sat in and all the things. I was talking about being a layman. I mean, here were these guys at Stanford Research Institute and all this. They were way off on theory stuff and all. It was fascinating. But that, I've been interested in it since then, and now it's really hit the press. It's the media. I'd say even our little local paper has an article every week or so that'll mention artificial intelligence, which fascinates me.
Well, you have some pretty prominent intellectual figures and/or entrepreneurs who are involved, and of course they're not all uniformly saying the same thing, but there are enough and of enough prominence talking about the dangers of artificial intelligence that I think it has finally captured the public imagination. That, and of course, all the manifestations of it that we're seeing in our lives, I don't know how much it's hitting everybody else in the face, at least in terms of sort of front of consciousness sorts of issues. But man, are we seeing signs of it if your eyes are open to it. We could come up with a lot of examples, I'm sure, but the one that's sort of seemingly mundane, which I think maybe is as insidious as any, is the autocomplete, not of words, but of whole sentences and thoughts when you're composing emails or even just text. But if you're, especially I've noticed it with Gmail, if I'm composing an email now, it will suggest, let's say, it suggests the rest of the sentence for you once you start your sentence, and it can kind of guess where you're going. Again, this is a sort of machine intelligence, not necessarily artificial intelligence.
Well, I don't differentiate.
Well, machine learning is what they technically call it.
I haven't actually seen. I've seen it complete words.
Oh, well, Harry, this again, I'm suggesting this is one of the seemingly mundane. Oh, that's nice. My email is suggesting things for me. That
what email do you have? A program you're using for that? Is it just
Gmail?
Just Gmail.
Yeah, just if you're composing on Gmail now, we'll suggest sentence completions, which seems convenient. And you just press tab, you know, if you're on your computer, or you just swipe right if you're on your phone, and it goes ahead and it fills in what it had suggested in gray.
That's interesting. My email is now Gmail. I haven't noticed that, but I will take a more careful look and see what's
going
on.
Well, you know, it's just going to creep in, sort of like voice recognition with, like you say, a lot of horsepower behind it, you know, that's made it possible. And it's really pretty phenomenal that that is possible. But when you just sort of reflect on it, even for a moment, it gives me pause, because, you know, it's not very many steps from that to it just composing the email for you. Like, why do you need to do it?
Yeah. Send a letter to my son telling him I will be a little late next week. You know?
So it'll just do it. It'll know that you want to do it. Yeah. I mean, and it's not very many steps, at least from where we are till then. And maybe the more troubling piece of it is, you know, a lot of times it'll suggest something which isn't the wording I would have chosen necessarily. It has a reason to choose the wording, probably just that a lot of people do it that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things about me is I tend to just use quirky wording. I just sometimes, in fact, I can't even use the same wording twice. It just bothers me. So I'm always, you know, trying to mix it up. But if the thing has auto-completed for me and it makes sense and it at least communicates what I intended, it's more convenient for me just to hit tab than to type in sort of where I was going with my thought.
Yeah.
But the troubling thing is, well, wasn't it a sort of an important sort of part of my identity, this sort of quirky way that I word things? That, you know, it's sort of just a little different. And if it turns out that it just becomes more convenient enough that I don't bother with that, well, it's just sort of the, whatever you call that, the vanilla, the McDonald's, the...
Yeah. Well, of course, another aspect is it may, the evolution of AI, I use the term loosely, we'll get back to that, but it may eventually get to learn who you are and start choosing wording more like your quirky choices and you know, start expressing your personality rather than giving the vanilla standard fill in the sentence. It may be saying, this is the way Eric Grossman would have said this. And
well, and I see what you're trying to do there is sort of rescue that, well, maybe it'll cover its own potential
problem.
Well, I'm
not saying it's a good thing. I mean,
well, that's what I was going to say. One of the main concerns I've heard, you know, that worries me also is that, easily imagine a time when the intelligence knows you even better than you know yourself. Like it may suggest something you haven't even realized would be the way that you would say it.
That would be interesting.
But if it gets ahead of you, that's also a problem. So so in one direction, it could just sort of do things that would be the way that everybody would do them. Yeah. But in the other direction, it could do things that are so much you that you wouldn't even realize, and it's gotten ahead of you. And the danger, and this is Israeli historian's take on it. I'm trying to remember his name. Harari, I think. Yuval Harari, I think is his name. His concern is at that point where the machine knows you better than you know you, of course, then it can control you. It can anticipate what you would do.
Well, there's stuff about that now with the social networks that they're using big data, and they are influencing people. Well, what was it way back in the movies? They were putting those little hidden messages you didn't know.
Exactly. It's subliminal messaging.
Yeah, but that they are already doing things that they are privately influencing you outside your awareness to go a certain direction.
And so there's been this arms race, of course, where, you know, advertising gets more sophisticated. We get a little more sophisticated. You might call it media savvy or something. And to some extent, you know, we could resent these subliminal attempts to manipulate us, but it's been sort of at a level that we could probably at least claim that we could exert our autonomy and figure out how to not be manipulated.
Well, this is
like that on steroids, right?
If
this would be way. This just makes that look like, I don't know.
Yeah,
child's play.
The recent political campaign, two friends of mine did not agree on Hillary, and got in.
Really, two people didn't agree on Hillary, right, I imagine.
Anyway, but they both were quite strong-willed and outspoken. And they, at a dinner party, they erupted into quite a confrontation, which was, we all had to sort of calm them down so we can get on with our dinner party. And apparently there was another confrontation that was much worse, and they are now sort of estranged.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, then later it came out that the Russians, this was a tribute, were
to go to the Russians, didn't
you? Overtly targeting the people who were on the bubble about Hillary or leaning against her, and giving them a lot of push to giving them information of what a hateful, mean character they made her appear to be, and think they significantly influenced this little pocket, which they targeted very carefully. And I cannot help but think that this one woman who was anti-Hillary had been part of that target.
Well, yeah, I think this is sort of the most obvious, maybe, or at least politicized manifestation of this sort of capacity to control. Well, and maybe like you're saying, sort of divides, you know, split people along these ideological lines. And it does look like there are sort of scissor statements. I read this fictionalized account of a machine learning program that was designed to find the most divisive statements and ideas. It was fictionalized, but yet I'm sure it was based on that, well, that problem from the 2016 election.
There were two aspects of it. One was the what message to put out there,
right,
to the, but the targeting was what was really scary to me, was that the ability to identify these subgroups that had particular, and there, it wasn't just that one, there were other groups they were after too, the racists and stuff, to go after them and influence the way they would vote or influence getting them not to vote. Anyway, I want to change the subject for a second. The other place that I'm very interested in is these devices like Alexa and OK Google and other things that you can talk to. Do you have one of those in your house? Do you use that at all?
Well, we have
Siri.
We have the Google Home Mini.
Yeah.
But actually, as it turns out, I don't have Wi-Fi in our house. That's another long story, bizarrely. But, you know, well, it's a whole other long story. But I know what you're talking about. And, of course, our phones are something like that. You know, I can talk to my phone,
yeah,
and have it do things.
Well, we have one. My son gave me an Alexa, I don't know, 3 years ago, 2 years ago. And then recently, OK Google, the Google device. And they're both sitting there, and they're both running all the time. But they're both hearing us all the time, which is a little scary in a way, you know. And they want to hear me say, I love doing this on the radio. If I say, Alexa, what time is it? Now, if this show is ever played and anybody's got one of those devices sitting there, it's going to wake up and respond to me saying
that. Right, right.
Anyway, I'm fascinated by their ability to understand us as well as they do. I can say something like, play some quiet jazz. Off it goes.
Well, this is another great example of sort of the relatively rapid. I mean, of course, it was a long time coming. They talked about voice recognition for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think there were naysayers who were like, well, that'll never happen. And there were optimists who thought it was imminent. At least from sort of the layperson's perspective, you know, it was sort of in the background. You knew they were working on it. There were some fairly clunky versions, but then all of a sudden, just in a very short span, boy, it got good. Like, you were just able to talk to your phone, and it transcribes with fairly remarkable veracity, you know, accuracy, I guess, what you're saying. It's maybe a hint of sort of the rapidity with which artificial intelligence in general may accelerate, another very worrisome piece of it. It's like all of a sudden what went from seemingly intractable technical problem, you know, making sense of human voice and language, it could do
well. Again, I'd like to focus on, there are two parts of that. When you dictate to the phone, which the ability to translate the voice into words is useful, but to understand what those words are asking for, to actually do something with the statement as opposed to just transcribe it so you can send it out as a communication. Well, sure. So that's the level that Alexa is scary. And we had an incident recently where Orphelis went over to change something on the stereo set, and we had the Alexa hooked up to it. And by mistake, she knocked something, a plug, off the thing. And she came out with an expletive. and the machine replied, "I'm sorry, I'm not equipped to do that." But, I mean, right, just what? The whole idea that they can make these things do. And then I sent you a message last week. There's a little quote in here that I got a kick out of where the Google Translate, utterly fascinating thing. You can go in and put any language in there that you can type if you can get the characters, and it'll translate into any other language, you know, including Latin.
Oh, yeah, I've used it.
Yeah, and I have friends who speak Spanish, and my Spanish isn't that good. So if I want to say something to them and I want to get it right, I'll type it in English and have it translate for me and cut it and paste it into the email, you know.
I think this is, while you're looking at that, I think this is interesting. Again, it's not hard to find naysayers who will tell you all the inadequacies of Google Translate, you know, compared to a human translator, at least a skilled one. And I think it's similar to the naysayers who thought that voice recognition wouldn't happen, face recognition wouldn't happen, or that, you know, a computer would never beat a human chess player or whatever. I think it's similar. They will say, well, oh no, there's a difference. Human beings do this very special thing, you know, grammar. You know, we're not the best people maybe to identify those issues. But the point is, the history has always been of those who say, well, that there's another whole order of things that humans do that machines will never do. And they've been proven wrong on everything. I don't know why they wouldn't be proven wrong on translation or as you're saying, it's not just a matter of transcribing speech, but of actually making sense of speech that we now say, I think would still say, well, wait, there's a lot, even though Alexa can tell if you're trying to, you know, find directions versus get a recipe, something like that, which seems pretty basic. If we were to give it something really tricky, you know, a joke or something, it might not get it.
When it starts getting jokes, that's going to be a step.
Well, you see, I didn't pick that arbitrarily. I think... I think that may be kind of the last frontier for human, for proving you're human is sort of humor, and for good reason. And I'm sure you'll want to talk about that because I think that relates to consciousness, and I know that's a topic that you want to get to. But anyway, I'm in the camp, even if we're still maybe in the minority, that thinks it's just a matter of time before the artificial intelligence is up to those what now seem like human level tasks.
Yeah. Well, I read little articles go by, and there was one within the last few months that apparently this Google Translate made a huge jump within the last year or so using deep learning or whatever they call it.
Right.
And that it now is significantly better at translating than it was just a year ago.
Right.
And then I also remember maybe 15 years ago typing into Google Translate or whatever it was called then and putting in a sentence and getting it back in Spanish, and then pasting it in Spanish, and translating it to English, mm-hmm. and doing that two or three times, it lost.
Garbled it all.
Yeah, but I suspect now it'd probably hang in there. Anyway, I wanted to read this little quote. Google Translate can expertly map the sentence, "The cat is annoyed that you haven't fed it," onto a French version that statistically means the same thing. Now, that's what it's getting very good at and got jumped better. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't grasp the meaning of cat, annoyed, or fed. It can't do counterfactuals. You can't ask Google Translate a question like, if the cat had been fed, would it still be annoyed? And have it come back with an answer, you know. So the 5-year-old child, by contrast, can probably answer that. But that's the ability to translate is nowhere near the kind of AI that we're fearing most, the one that where it actually understands and has a context and relates it, you know. I just want to throw that out.
I don't know. Would it Well, that's maybe a question worth asking. Would it be scary if your voice recognition, application on your phone could understand what you actually wanted? Is that scary?
Well, I mean, obviously it does already to some extent. You can say, call my brother or call Fred, or you can say, please play a song by Dave Brubeck. You know, there are various things that it can understand. But if it can understand something like, would my wife be angry if I didn't get the car washed today?
That's a good one. Would that be bad? A bad thing? I started on this topic just to help out. I started watching this movie. It's, I think, a few years dated now, called Her.
Her?
Her. It's the artificial intelligence that the man falls in love with.
Yeah.
And that's the narrative of the movie. I got kind of tired of it midway, so I stopped watching it. But that idea, that concept of a helper. He was alone, newly alone, and struggling with dating, and he's downloaded this virtual helper, this artificial intelligence, who could just immediately sift through all his contacts, sift through all his old emails, and suggest things helpfully, and compose things helpfully, all that sort of thing, and really get to know him well enough to be very helpful and offer him advice and things like that. So, and then fall in love, it turns out, but which maybe was a little bit on the corny side for me. But in any case, that idea of knowing you well enough to be helpful and knowing what you mean and what you might like, is that scary?
It certainly potentially scary. I mean, like everything else, I get to digress for a minute. most of my life, certainly the first 40 years or so, I believed that technology was a good thing, that it was to improve the standard of living of the human race and to make things better. And I just had the idea that more technology was good, and that's the way it had always been and should be. And then it slowly dawned on me more in the last 10 years or so that technology, the way I put it, is has no moral compass. It doesn't have any sense of right or wrong or progress. It's just a tool. And that at this point, we use that tool. And it turns out that our primary use of technology has been to kill other human beings. The whole development of the airplane industry, the weapons industry, a lot of things that are done. So is it scary? Well, the first thought I have is, it depends on how it's used.
Who's telling it what to do?
Yeah, it could be abused and misused. That would be bad. But the second thing that hits me is, we'll get to this maybe later, if computers ever do start developing consciousness, their own ability to make choices, they might be directing how it's used. And then that ability indeed does become very scary. They can not only understand us, they can decide what to do with their understanding of us, as opposed to us deciding what to do with our having the computers. So
I can't even decide which one is worse, Harry. Technology, which is really good at doing what we ask it, versus technology, which is really good at sort of knowing what to do based on its own sort of computation. I don't know which one's worse. There's several thought experiments, one of which is like, say you have a computer that's just super, well, not a computer, but an intelligence, however that's manifest, that is programmed to create paper clips. Have you heard this one?
Not yet.
So you basically just give it that task. It's like, all right, you learn to make paper clips, okay? Don't just make them the way I tell you. You learn to make paper clips. So it learns to make paper clips. Well, and then of course it takes what it learns and builds on it and makes more paper clips and improves that again, because it's an intelligence, right? It sort of learns from its own trial and error and collects information, and then it just starts turning things into paper clips that had other uses which you might appreciate, like say life on Earth. It takes all the organic material it can find to make paperclips, and then it, you know, then it moves on to the solar system and figures out how to mine the whole solar system. So before you know it, the universe has been turned into paperclips. So that's kind of the
witch,
apocalypse.
It's the witch's broom thing. But yeah, well, again, you know, right away we differentiate between learning how to make paperclips and how to be very good at making paperclips versus the directive of make as many paperclips as you possibly can, you know.
Well, I'm just saying the problem with a very good device that just knows how to do something really well,
yeah.
I mean, it's not just that it's going to do that too much. It's going to be that, well, it may be that it's just equipping one side, you know, to completely outstrip the other side. Like, just depends on who has it, right, and what their interests are. So, you know, say the U.S. right now is developing drones, and I'm sure that they are, and I'm sure that other countries have a strong interest, meaning kind of like these little autonomous killing machines, really is what I mean when I say drones.
You've been listening to Wombats and Artificial Intelligence, and we're going to have to end here. We'll have the second 30 minutes of this conversation a week from today. You've been listening to Harry Baya and Eric Grossman discussing artificial intelligence and related topics. If you'd like to contact me and make any comments about this show or get a link that where you can hear the entire conversation between Eric and me, please send me email at harry@baya.net. That's harry@baya.net. Thank you. Goodbye.